David Icke is a former professional soccer player, journalist, and network anchorman with the BBC. He was the spokesman in the 1980s for the British Green Party, and since 1990, a full-time investigator into who and what is really controlling the world. He's the author of 15 books, including Alice in Wonderland and the World Trade Center Disaster, and his latest book, Infinite Love is the Only Truth, Everything Else is Illusion. On his never-ending quest for the truth, he simply says the cutting edge just moved. Never before has a book explained with such clarity why physical reality is merely an illusion that only exists in our brain. But David Icke's information, presented in a way that everyone can understand, is a life-changing exposure of both the illusion we believe to be real and the way this illusion is generated and manipulated to imprison us in a false reality. He's our guest back again on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, David, how are you?
I'm a good, Jersey.
Always good to talk with you, my friend. You know, technology is fantastic. Here you are in the United Kingdom. I'm in St. Louis right now, soon to head back to Los Angeles, where our signal's being fed back to. I mean, isn't this something? I love it.
Yeah, it's very good for me, too, and understanding the nature of reality, because particularly the Internet, is a wonderful symbol for the nature of the reality we live in. We live in a holographic internet. And just as you can log on to the internet with a computer in China or America or Germany or England and share what is the same reality, so it more and more seems clear to me that what we're actually doing through the DNA, which is a crystalline receiver transmitter, and the brain, is logging in to a holographic internet and turning waveforms, broadcasts, like the television broadcasts in waveform and the television turns it into pictures, we're turning them into holographic pictures, holographic reality. And believing it to be solid and real, and that's the key to holding us in prison, believing an illusion is real.
You know, David, I've been looking at your works for a number of years now, and, you know, if one could look at a complete puzzle, you wouldn't really know what that puzzle looked like until many of those pieces were put together. Almost like your works that you've been doing over the years now, to me, you've been telling us and painting us a broad puzzle, and every little ingredient that you've presented has been a piece of that puzzle. Is my perception correct that what you have been doing now is almost a complete picture?
I think, George, the biggest mistake that people can make is to believe they've got the picture. When anyone tells me they've got the picture, they're telling me they haven't, because there's a great quote by a Greek philosopher called Socrates, which is, wisdom is knowing how little we know. And you're absolutely correct in your analysis that what I've been doing is, over the years, putting puzzle pieces together, connecting dots. But the trick is not to think that at any point you have found the last dot, because my journey has began with an amazing kind of what you might call spiritual experience, which opened the top of my head up and blew it off, really. And from that moment, I started having an amazing series of synchronistic experiences, which led me to information, people who had information, which put together a picture of how the world in the five sense level of reality is manipulated by a few interbreeding families through a network of secret societies, to the very end that we're seeing unfold on the news now every day, the centralization of power to the point where the few control the many on a vast scale. Then this journey and these puzzle pieces took me into the fact that other dimensional entities, other dimensional influences beyond the tiny, tiny frequency that human sight can access, we're also manipulating this five-sense reality we call the physical world. And now with this book, it's taken another leap forward into What is this whole multidimensional reality that we are experiencing? What is it? How is it generated? How come that although people, you know, increasingly say, and they have done for centuries, the mystics and the seers, that we create our own reality? How come then that if I looked out of my window here and you looked out of my window here, George, we'd both see the same car go past? How is this collective reality generated?
That's right.
Because of this, the series of experiences that I had in the time running up to starting to write this book and during it, it became very clear to me that, you know, what I mentioned a few minutes ago is basically what we're experiencing. We are in a holographic version of the internet, and we are logging in through the DNA, through the brain, to a collective reality. And then we put our own spin on that reality by how we react to it. For instance, we could both see that same car, but we would differ on what we thought of it.
Well, and as you were saying, as you connect the dots, I think every time you connect a dot to another dot, you find another dot, don't
exactly.
you?
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, yeah, it's funny, George, you know, because every time I finish a book, I think, well, what am I going to do now? I mean, you know, where do I go from here? And then within weeks, another massive area opens up and you think, oh, crikey, here we go again. So, you know, reality is not only infinite in its sense of existence, it's also infinite in its possibilities. Therefore, anyone that gets themselves in a state where they think they have sussed it, where they think that they now understand what reality is and what possibility is and what's possible, they've just built themselves another prison a bit further down the road from someone else, because all possibility means all possibility. So where are the rules in all possibility? There are none except those that we invent for ourselves and imprison ourselves with.
You know, David, as we see these events unfolding all around the world and some of the past things that you've worked on, I got to tell you this funny, interesting story. Last week, unbeknownst to the person I was talking to, that you were going to be on the program, she was talking to another individual, and after she was done talking to this guy, she turned to me and said, George, did you notice his eyes? And I went, yeah, they were a little strange. They had this yellow cast to it, and they were kind of beady. And she said, he's a reptilian. And she said, I wish to God I could get this to David Icke. And little did she know, she was going to. It's just a small world of synchronicity. But there are people like that all around this planet, aren't there?
Yeah, there are. And see, people just need to appreciate that what they get through the mainstream media is a tiny, tiny fraction of what's actually happening in the world. In many ways, it's symbolic of how we look through our eyes and we think we're seeing everything that there is to exist in the space that we're looking at, when actually we're seeing the most infinitesimal fraction. I go into this in the new book, and the figures are ridiculous. The electromagnetic spectrum is about 0.005% of what is predicted to exist in the universe by mainstream science. Even that is only what they have understood exists up to this point. And visible light, which is all that we can actually, quote, see, is a fraction of the 0.005%. So what we've got ourselves into is a situation where, as one writer said, we're virtually blind, and yet we believe we can see everything. And this is a prison of self-delusion and implanted delusion, which gets so many people to dismiss that which is beyond what they can see. I mean, you know, I say to people, just look on the figures that I've just given. Just look at the unbelievable diversity of form that exists within that tiny frequency range that we can access with the human sight. And then imagine the diversity of form that exists in that vast infinity that our eyes cannot access, and then laugh again at the fact that there are entities, some that take reptilian form and many other forms. Of course, we're dealing with infinite possibility. Of course, they take infinite forms that are what we would call intelligent life and can manipulate this reality that we are experiencing. Unless we realize the nature of reality and what we can access with the five senses, we are going to have an amazingly perverted view of possibility and therefore dismiss that which is happening, but we cannot actually perceive with the five senses. And this is why, George, and I go into this in the book, society is structured to hold us in five-sense reality. Look at the whole way that it's made up. It's there to entice and to stimulate the five senses of sight, of touch, of smell, of sound, all these things. And of course, there's nothing wrong with the five senses. Experience them. But if we believe that that's who we are, then we are going to be held in this prison of perception instead of opening ourselves to the infinite consciousness that we are. We're going to be operating on a fraction of our infinite potential, and that's why, you know, society is structured like this. And again, we come down to the mainstream media. The reason it shows like yours and others around the world that put out this stuff and not the mainstream, you know, the CBSs and the NBCs, is because that which wishes to control humanity knows that if it doesn't hold the mass of the people in the five sense prison and the five sense reality, then we're going to start opening up and see the white bits between the words. In other words, see beyond the manipulated illusion that is projected at us all the time. And it's very interesting when I was putting this book together to see just how much of this stuff mainstream science has already established to be true, but it has not connected the dots, because so many of these disciplines of science, they don't talk to each other. And people are focusing on the twigs and they can't see the forest. And the forest is that we are living in an illusion which we are generating, not least through our own belief. As psychological experiments have shown, we are constantly editing the information we receive to fit a preconceived belief, a preconceived idea of reality. I remember talking to Credo Mutwa, the Zulu shaman, the official historian of the Zulu nation. I spent 10 days with him recently in South Africa. It was just a fantastic experience. And he said to me years ago, when I said to him, you know, these reptilian entities, you know, so many people I've met, I've talked about experiencing them. Why don't more people experience them? And he said, because they are so fantastic compared with the reality that people generally perceive that their brain, as he put it, edits them out, switches them out of the reality that they see. And when you, years later, I came across these psychological experiments that have been done, that's exactly what they've found. We are editing up to and sometimes more than 50% of the detail we receive in information. We're editing it in terms of putting stuff in that's not there, taking stuff out that is there, simply to formulate, to construct a reality that fits our belief. Therefore, if you can implant what people believe to be real, what people believe to be possible, then you are externally constructing their reality through this process. And some of the figures you come across when you research this stuff, here's one. The brain receives 400 billion pieces of information every second, but we are aware of just 2,000. So what the heck is happening in the rest?
It's gone. Is it gone, or is it stored somewhere?
Well, we're not picking it up on the conscious level. And there's some other figures that kind of start to form a big gray thing with a trunk sitting on the couch in the living room. 95% of the mass of the universe, we can't see. We can't even see with technology, but in terms with our eyes, as I said earlier, it's a minute fraction even of that. 95% of the brain's activity doesn't relate to the waking state or, quote, physical reality, which fits with the 400 billion and the 2,000. And this is what gets a lot of people who don't realize this. It is a bit of a shocker. We believe, so many people believe, because that's the impression we're given, that all-knowing science has understood DNA. Oh, yes, we've mapped the human genome. We know what DNA is. Well, why then does mainstream science call, depending on who you talk to, between 90 and 97% of DNA? Why do they call it junk DNA? I mean, you know, as I've said in the book, I use different words, but was God having a laugh? I mean, I'm going to throw in this DNA here, 97% of it, and it does nothing. That'll confuse them. Please. And when you look at these figures, clearly this junk DNA, as they call it, which they don't understand, relates to these other figures. If the 95% of brain activity doesn't relate to the waking state, this vast area of known existence that we cannot access, and the whole idea that we've sussed DNA is absolutely ridiculous, and it is a key to understanding the nature of reality, because I would strongly suggest that it is the receiver transmitter that locks us into this holographic internet, just like a computer locks us into the internet that we know. And interestingly, I nearly fell off my chair when it happened. As I was finishing the book, and it was going off to be put in designed as a book, I came across this article about Russian scientists who had done this research project with geneticists and linguists and various other people of different disciplines to try to understand what this mass of junk DNA actually did. And what they concluded was that the body was a biological computer, a biological internet, which is exactly what my book has concluded, coming from a completely different point of reference and starting point. We are in a situation, I would strongly suggest, and I set out the evidence in the book, where we are identifying who we are with a biological computer we call the body. Instead of understanding that what we are is infinite consciousness. And by identifying who we are with the body, I'm David Icke, I was born in Leicester, England, I'm English and all this stuff, we are identifying with the program and not identifying with the infinity of who we are. And when we identify with the program and forget we're infinite, then we are a manipulator's party trick.
How many people would be able to pull themselves away from this, David, and realize that what they think is reality is not?
Well, it's possible for everyone to do it. Pressure, of course, is for them not to do it. And this is an amazing coincidence, is it not, that society is actually structured to prevent people doing that. We're constantly told that we're this or we're that. We're constantly told that there are limits and limitations. Constantly told, infinite consciousness doesn't exist. And so all the pressure is for us not to go there. But what is happening, you must have seen it in your show over the years, and I've found it more and more, is that this awakening is happening and more people are starting to move beyond the program into consciousness and see that they've been living an illusion. It's happening all over the world.
It is dramatic, David. Stay with us. Nori, with our special guest tonight, David Icke. David, the word Illuminati, so many people, so many different definitions. You, of course, I think have your finger right on the pulse of this thing. What do you believe the Illuminati to be?
Well, during this journey I've been on, George, like I mentioned earlier, I've been passing through the different levels, each of which relate to the other levels. And when you start looking at the Illuminati, this network of interbreeding families which lock into this secret society network, the secret society pyramid, which is not just one secret society, it works through endless numbers. Well, there are certain key ones that are closer to the spider, if you like, than others. You realize very early on, because it's obvious, that they are holding very advanced knowledge that the rest of the population is not allowed to know. It's passed on through initiations and even, you know, all these lower levels of the secret societies, you know, they're just in the dark in a different way. It's only the few at the peak of the pyramid that actually have the real deal. And even that, you know, is hierarchical. The ones at the top of the capstone that know more than those slightly below it. As you start to understand the nature of reality and how we create it, it's clear that this hidden secret knowledge, to a vast, vast extent, relates to this understanding. And if you understand how people create reality through what they believe, then you are in a wonderful position to manipulate the reality of people. And that's what they're doing. And the greatest way they're doing it is this oblong box in the corner of almost every room in the world now, or every living room, the television. You know, it's a hypnotist. You know, quite simply, in symbolic, and not just symbolic terms, the mass of the human race are like subjects, stooges on the stage of a stage hypnotist. And the stage hypnotist, collectively, is like the Illuminati. And what they're doing is implanting beliefs. Like the stage hypnotist will implant into the person's reality that there's an elephant in the audience, or they're eating an apple, but it's really a potato. So the Illuminati are constantly banging out, this is what is real. 9/11 was the terrorists from, you know, the Arab world and all this stuff, and implanting this belief. And because of what I said earlier about we edit our reality based on our belief in what is real, we then edit our reality on the basis of what they have got us to believe. People need to appreciate that the difference between thinking you're eating an apple and thinking you're eating a potato is merely the interpretation of electrical signals by the brain. That's all it is. What's happening is the implanted belief by the stage hypnotist is just tricking the brain, just like monosodium glutamate tricks the brain to believe there's more taste there than there really is in food. What they're doing is tricking the brain to interpret the electrical signals as an apple rather than a potato. That's the only difference. Now, on a mass scale, that's what the Illuminati are doing by control of the mainstream media, by control of what's bravely called education, and all the rest of the so-called sources of information that we get in daily life. They are implanting a false reality by implanting a false belief in reality.
And what do they want?
Leave us alone to edit reality based on what they've implanted. And the freedom, George, is to start disconnecting ourselves from implanted belief and starting to come to our own understanding and having the confidence to be the male that stands out above the rest and not continually bow to the fear of what other people think and therefore conform to the collective reality, which is just an implanted illusion.
What do they want? They've got more money than God. You know, why don't they just leave us alone?
Well, as I've gone through these levels, and there are many more to go through, I'm not sitting cross-legged on a mountain to say I've sussed it, like I said earlier. The bigger it gets, and it seems that we have not only found ourselves in a five-sense prison, but in a multidimensional one. Because, you know, for me, I have no problem with reincarnation. What I say in the book, it is not necessary. We are all-knowing infinite consciousness. We do not have to evolve to become all-knowing infinite consciousness. what we've been tricked into believing, not just in this five-sense level, as I say, but in other levels of reality, is that somehow we have to evolve to become what we already are. That's what's caught us in this trap. And for me, there was a wonderful, wonderful saying that someone said. I don't know who said it, but it was magnificent. We are not our thoughts. We are the silence between them. And as I've understood more and more of the nature of this matrix false reality, that is so magnificently true, because the DNA does not, the biological computer that these Russian scientists talk about and I talk about in the book, not only contains our genetic characteristics, our, quote, physical characteristics, I would strongly suggest it also is the seat of what we call mind and emotions, thought and emotion. And the reason that when people go into meditative states, they go into silence. The reason that, this phrase says we are not our thoughts, we are the silence between them, is because the silence is infinite all-knowing consciousness, what we really are. That's why people get incredible insights from going into this state. I've done it myself. Now, the reason, George, that infinite consciousness, all-knowing consciousness, is silent is because it's all-knowing. It doesn't think. It doesn't have to work things out. It knows. It doesn't need this chatter that goes on in our heads all the time. What about the mortgage? What about the cat? What about that? What do you think? That is the program defending itself from infinite consciousness. And when you start to just take a step back and observe your thoughts rather than being them, observing your emotions rather than being them, you start to hear them and feel them like a radio show. And you start to think, hey, I'm not my emotions, and I'm not my thoughts. I'm something beyond that, because I'm watching them pass or hearing them pass by. And when you go into that state, you realize that we are caught in an illusion of identifying with a biological computer, a holographic illusion in itself, and therefore forgetting what we really are. And when you come from the perspective of I am infinite consciousness, having an experience, your life completely changes compared with I'm David Icke from Leicester, and this is my body, and this is what I look like, and this is who I am, you know.
Well, now,
and my emotions and my thoughts are me. You know?
The title, of course, in the book, Infinite Love is the Only Truth. Explain that phrase for me.
Well, what happened, George, is that back in 2003, back to earlier than that, I think.
And back off the phone just a little bit.
Oh, sorry. Yeah,
just,
yeah,
that's okay.
I got a big gob, as we say.
You're a booming.
Yeah. Back in 2003, in fact, in a while before, I got to the point when I was writing and completing Alice in Wonderland of the World Trade Center disaster, where I understood very clearly that if I was going to go forward with this, rather than get in a holding pattern, going round and round and round, kind of processing more and more of the same types of information, then I had to somehow experience reality beyond this one. And I went to Brazil, because I was invited just after that, very synchronistically, by a group in Brazil who were having a group of people to partake in something called ayahuasca, which is a kind of it's a rainforest plant that South American shaman rather have been using to take people into other levels of reality. And interesting, George, why they asked me if I wanted to go was because so many people who'd gone into that altered state over the years of them doing it had said that they had seen reptilian type entities in this altered state. That's one of the reasons they asked me. So I went down. I could have took it four times, took it twice. And I went into an amazing, amazing place where this a voice as loud as mine is now, even when I get too close to the phone. Talk to me for
and I'll keep reminding you.
Talk to me for 5 hours about the nature of reality. And I went to a place of absolute unbelievable bliss, silence, where there was no vibration. The vibration is in the matrix. It's a mathematical construct, which I'm sure we'll get into as the evening goes on. Heard all this stuff about the nature of reality and how illusory it was. And when the voice started speaking to me, it said, there's only one thing that you really need to know. Infinite love is the only truth. Everything else is illusion. And as I heard this this repeating over and over, I formed in my head the question, do you mean everything? And before it finished it flowing through my mind, the voice came back, infinite love is the only truth. Everything else is illusion. That's it. And by infinite love, it also encompasses infinite everything else. It's infinite intelligence. It's infinite knowing. It's infinite understanding. It's that level in which we are everything, and everything is us. Everything is conscious. Everything has consciousness because all energy is conscious. But there are different levels of awareness within this consciousness. And for the purposes of the book, and simplicity, I define consciousness as that which is beyond the illusion, which is beyond the illusory reality. And when that's the kind of level that we start to enter when we enter the silence, infinite love. I mean, you know, anyone has gone into a meditative state, a high meditative state. What do they feel? They feel peace. They feel love. They feel all these things because they're entering that level of existence. And what we've done is detach ourselves from it, detach ourselves mentally, detached ourselves emotionally, detached ourselves in terms of belief. And when we do that through belief, then we detach ourselves in terms of experience. It doesn't mean we cease to become infinite possibility, infinite oneness, infinite love. It means that our belief has detached us from experiencing what we are, and we experience, therefore, what we believe, which is a world of not unity, but division. Not a world in which we see all our everything as one, but we see the parts, and the parts, thanks to the Illuminati, can then be manipulated to go into conflict with each other. And we're so busy fighting each other, so busy trying to impose our belief on others, symbolically have got our head down on the desk, on the paper, and we don't lift it up and go, ooh, hey, it's not like I thought it was. Keep their heads down. It's like a thing I quote in the book, it's like a manual for mass mind control, which came to light years ago now, called Silent Weapons for a Quiet War, has a line in there, keep them busy, 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 back on the farm with the other animals. If they can keep us focused on celebrity, on what's happening in the world, on the latest craze, all these things, if they can keep us focused on that, then we don't lift our head and see beyond it. And more than that, George, most important, if they can put us in a state of economic survival, then we're so focused on how we're going to pay the rent at the end of the month,
right,
how we're going to feed the kids,
make our car payments.
Exactly. The big questions, just, hey, I'm sorry, mate, I live in the real world, right? I've got some kids to feed. Don't give me that stuff. I can't be doing with it. I've got to earn some money. And this is not by accident. This is by design. It's keeping us busy, busy, busy back on the farm with the other animals.
David, how long has this been going on? Since the beginning of time, mankind?
Well, again, there are many, many situations, very many questions that I have that, you know, I can't say with any certainty this is how it is. But I came across a Hindu myth which said this. This is centuries old, probably more. Human consciousness began as a ripple that decided to leave the ocean of consciousness, what it called the timeless, spaceless, and eternal. When it awakened to itself in this disconnected state, disconnected in its own belief, the myth said it forgot that it was part of the infinite ocean and felt isolated and separated. And this this 5-hour download of the nature of reality that I had in Brazil a few years ago, like I mentioned, said exactly the same. What has happened is that consciousness that is within the matrix has got itself into a situation where it's forgotten who it is, forgotten what it really is, and it's created a false reality based on this illusion of disconnection. And so basically, collectively, the consciousness within the matrix has created the matrix. In many ways, it's very symbolic of the story of Frankenstein and the Sorcerer's Apprentice, the Disney movie, where you create something and then what you have created becomes the master. What we've done is we have forgotten we, the dreamer. We've forgotten that we're also the dream. We've allowed the dream to take over and control our reality. It's very much a Frankenstein version of consciousness.
It's turned into a nightmare dream, hasn't it?
Yeah, but these are things that are, you know, thinking aloud. But that's all I can say that I've come across, and I think the basis of it is correct, and that means we're in complete control of our reality by changing what we believe, by changing what we understand, by understanding that we are infinite consciousness and expressing ourselves as if we are, rather than Fred Bloggs from Los Angeles or whatever. We will completely transform the way our life manifests, because this is the staggering thing. But again, science has sussed this in its own way in mainstream science. The only place that the five sense, quote, solid world exists is in our heads. Because what the eyes are doing is turning light into what they call visible light into electrical signals and passing it on to the brain for interpretation. That's what all the five senses are doing. We are decoding frequencies into a holographic reality. Now, because we are connected to this holographic internet, if you like, we are sharing a very, very similar reality in its basic form, but what we make of that reality and how our beliefs of that in that reality create a different experience for me than for you than for someone else, that's down to ourselves, how we interpret what we're receiving. 400 billion pieces of information a second, we are aware of 2,000, but we're making decisions all the time based on which 2,000 or whatever we choose to be aware of. That some people will see ghosts, some people will see other dimensional entities, other people will not. And other people will see one thing in a situation, other people will see something else. It's interesting, I saw experiments on television, fascinating, where they put two people together who had really serious preconceived ideas about each other. They got them to talk to each other on camera. They then took them away individually, asked them what the other one had said, and they gave a totally different version of what the other one had actually said.
Exactly.
And then when they played it back to them together, they couldn't believe it, because what they were doing was editing what the other one said and the way it was said to fit with their preconceived idea of the person. And that's what we're doing in our reality, second after second, all the time.
Stay with us, David, when we come back at the top of the hour. One of your most controversial theories, reptilian. David, you created quite a stir years ago when you came out with your thoughts and theories about reptilians. I think it's only appropriate that we review that a little bit more for some people who haven't had an opportunity to hear your thoughts on that. The reptilians, how far back are we going?
Well, mid-90s and just after that, I think, I started to come across more and more people all around the world, because, you know, I've not sat at home here and in a darkened room coming to these conclusions. You know, I've got off my backside and followed the flow of life, and it has led me to an amazing synchronicity of information. And I've met people all over the world, right up to recent times when I went to South Africa about 3 weeks ago, who have had the same basic recurring experience, and that is of seeing people, apparently human at first, turn into a reptilian type figure and then go back again. what we call shape-shifting, of course, which is a theme of ancient accounts going as far back as you want to go. And this became so compelling in the sheer volume of people that I'd met who were telling me the same basic experience from cultures all over the world. And then you look back into ancient accounts and you find the same recurring theme of people who had the ability to move between human and reptilian form. And in my books, I lay especially ones like Children of the Matrix and The Biggest Secret, I go into this background in great detail. And when you first hear it and you come from the perspective that we are solid beings in solid bodies in a solid world, then of course the idea of moving between one form and another just becomes ludicrous. And like I've mentioned tonight already, George, if we get caught in the implanted illusion that this world is, quote, solid and real in the sense that we perceive it as physical, then things like shape-shifting are one of the examples I was talking about where people go, that's impossible, mate. Don't be daft. You're mad. But when you realize that physical form is actually a hologram, and what a hologram is, it's an illusion. When you have a holographic print, which is a waveform, and you put the laser on it, it's a waveform of whatever you've taken a holographic photograph of, and you put the laser on it, suddenly the image that appeared to be a series of chaotic wavy lines becomes a apparently three-dimensional form of whatever you photographed. You turn the laser off, and it disappears, and you're back to the waveform. And in physics, they have realized, in quantum physics, that what we call particles take two forms. The particles that make up this apparently physical world, they take a waveform, non-physical, and they take a particle form. And the only time the wave becomes the particle is when we observe it. And therefore, we are like the laser on the waveform of the holograms that we make all the time. We are turning a waveform in our heads, in our minds, into a apparently three-dimensional image. Therefore, once you start to realize that that's what the nature of human form is, then moving between one form and another becomes much more straightforward than if you're talking about some solid body where all the organs have to move and all that stuff. You know, we're so caught in the illusion that so many things that are possible become impossible in our minds because of the limitation of perception that we allow in. And these reptilians, the ones that I talk about, have the ability to move between this dimension and another. And what's happening, the number of times, George, that people have said to me around the world, this thing, as they call it sometimes, just appeared out of nowhere. Well, it didn't. What it did was enter the tiny frequency range that human sight can access. And as it entered that frequency range, boom, suddenly it appeared. This is what's happening so often, George, with what we call UFOs, where people go, honestly, mate, I saw it and then it just disappeared. Well, people go, well, you know, are you on the pop? What are you on? What's happened is it's left the frequency range that that person's eyes can access. And at that moment, to him, it disappears. But it doesn't disappear. It's gone into another frequency of existence, another frequency of reality. And we have been so disconnected by the tiny, tiny area of possibility that we are constantly given from cradle to grave, that all this other stuff that happens outside that becomes dismissed because it's too much for us to grasp, because we're coming from a false reality, i.e. the world is solid. I'm looking at a solid wall here. It can't be. It's made up of atoms. Anyone seen the inside of an atom? There's nothing in it. Someone once said, if you take the atom to be the size of a cathedral, then the particles within it are about the size of a 10-cent piece.
Exactly.
How can that be create a solid wall? It cannot, but our minds can construct it, and it does, because what we're doing is we are decoding frequency fields into holographic forms, and some frequency fields we are decoding as dense and some less dense, depending on the frequency that we're dealing with, in the same way as I've mentioned that the television is decoding frequency broadcasts into pictures. We're doing the same. And therefore, like I say, this whole shape-shifting thing, which seems ridiculous on one level of reality, becomes perfectly understandable from the bigger perspective of reality. And from a human manipulation point of view, seems very, very clear to me after all these years of research that what is actually happening is this world is controlled in the five-sense reality by people who, to our five-sense perception, appear human. But just beyond that, beyond this visible light range, they actually take a very different form. And some people see this movement between the forms. Other people see the eyes change. That's the first thing that changes. The number of people now who said to me, I saw his or her eyes change to a reptilian state. I saw
it's
it, mate.
It's like that person that I was just telling you about last hour.
Yeah, and so these people in these bloodlines that end up in positions of power under different names. And the real power is never put on public display. I mean, the idea that George Bush runs America, I mean, please, you know, intelligent life calling planet Earth here. But it's the people behind the scenes and the entities behind the scenes that really call the shots. But these on public display are often from this bloodline, but a lower level of the hierarchy, because this reptilian stream seems incredibly hierarchical. And so when I went to South Africa 3 weeks ago, I spent 10 days traveling around South Africa with the Credo Mutwa, the Zulu shaman. I mean, in their culture, of the shamanistic level of understanding, the whole reptilian shape-shifting thing is like, yeah, mate, and, you know, it's like part of it, part of common knowledge at that level. They call them the Chitahuri, which translates as the children of the serpent or the children of the python. And it goes way back in their culture, this group of shape-shifting entities who are actually manipulating human existence. So, like I say, I haven't come up with this as some theory. I've let the information be the lead, not the preconceived idea, because how do you get a preconceived idea that reptilian entities will think the world? I mean, what? I follow the information, and the information just builds all the time. The number of people who come on to me now, because I've become a bit of a magnet for this for obvious reasons, and say that I thought it was only me. And one of the great things the books have done is to show people that who've had this experience, hey, no, you're not going crazy. Loads of people have had it. It's just that they're not talking about it for the same reason you're not. They fear what other people think. And this fear of saying something that's different, that's outside the norm, is the most effective imprisoner of experience, because the number of people who say, well, look, I've had this experience, man, I can talk to you because I know you won't think I'm mad, but I've never talked about it publicly. I won't even tell my wife. You know, there's so much knowledge out there, George, that is not being communicated because of the, what I can only describe as psychological fascism that goes on in the world, where people's beliefs have to be defended by suppressing other beliefs that are different.
Where do you believe they came from, these shape-shifters? Another dimension, another planet, or have they always been earthbound?
Well, it's an interesting question. My feeling is they're interdimensional. Well, it's clearly they're interdimensional. They have ability to move into this dimension and out again. And, you know, those questions are, you know, the jury's out for me. But certainly what Credo Mutwa says and what the African belief is going way back is that they're actually of the earth they believe that this planet is theirs, but also we need to appreciate that when we talk of planets, we're again talking of a multidimensional situation. you know, we can look at Mars or we can look at these other planets and we say, oh, there's no life there, mate. They're all dead. Look. But what we're looking at is Mars or any other planet from the frequency range of visible light, which we can access with our five senses. Other levels of Mars might be teeming with life in other frequencies of existence. So when we talk about entities from Mars and people say, it can't come from Mars, look at you. It's because it is possible because there are other endless frequency ranges of these planets that we can't access, but life exists within.
How did these reptilians on this planet, David, get so powerful?
Well, it's a simple process of disconnecting the mass of the people from the true understanding of who they are and feeding them a false reality. And it's, you know, when you look at this, you don't need that many to run the show. Take the process very simply in, for instance, the American government. The reason that the candidates attract vast amounts of money, in George Bush's case, record-breaking amounts of money. It's necessary, of course, with him to get him in. You are attracting that money from these major Illuminati sources. And if you are someone who is not going to play the game or is not part of the game, then you simply do not attract the money. You end up in a plane crash like Wellston did. You don't run for president and with any chance of victory. And so you, the Illuminati in the background, put the president in place. Then through the president, that's just one position, and look at the power of control in America just by controlling that one position. Through that position, then you decide who's going to be head of the Treasury, who's going to be head of the Pentagon, who's going to be head of the State Department. And those people then decide who's going to be deputy. In fact, they're probably told who the deputy is going to be. And there you have already a structure in which the major departments of state are controlled.
And is this happening?
People below them in the pyramid of the State Department, below them in the pyramid of the Pentagon, take their orders, their direction, and their actions from the top. The number of positions, George, you actually have to control within a government to control the government is ridiculously few compared with the number of people actually in government administration. So
when
people say it's the government, no. And it's not the Freemasons either. It is that which is manipulating through these organizations and imposing its will through them, not everyone that's involved with them.
Is this happening worldwide?
It's happening worldwide, yeah, and it's happening more and more worldwide. The basic progression of this was that these bloodlines certainly had a major, major base in Babylon, which is now, of course, what we call Iraq. And the ancient Sumer, Babylon, Egyptian civilization certainly come into this. There was then a movement in terms of focus from Babylon through to Rome. And that's when Rome became the Roman Empire. That's when we had the creation of the Roman Church, which became Christianity. And it's also the reason why, apart from the names being different, the basic story of Christianity is mirrored in the beliefs and myths of Babylon. Indeed, the holy days match as well. And then the progression moved into Northern Europe, Rome and what we call the Vatican remaining a major, major player. But it expanded up into Northern Europe, where eventually a major headquarters became London, or as some people call it, Babby London. And then we had the major global progression of this when we had the empires of Europe, particularly the British Empire, the French Empire, which very relevant, of course, to North America. And what happened was that the bloodlines and the secret society networks that manipulate the bloodline personnel into power, they went out from these centers in Europe to the Americas, to Australia, to Africa, Asia, all over the place, and colonized them. But there are two forms of control One has a finite life, one has an infinite life until it's exposed. The one with a finite life is a control you can see. It's fascism, it's communism, it's dictatorship that you can see, touch, and taste, that you can put a name to. Because the people in that form of control know they're controlled. And eventually, it might take some time, the desire for freedom in the human heart will eventually rebel against that. The greatest form of control is control that you cannot see. Control that gives the illusion of freedom and choice while fundamentally controlling both. And what happened when these colonial powers, especially the British Empire, started withdrawing and giving freedom to their former colonies, is they left out there the bloodline and the secret society network already in place. And they've gone on controlling those countries ever since. The difference is those countries have perceived themselves to be free. If you talk to Credo Mutwa, he'll give you chapter and verse on the way that the leaders of black African countries, overwhelmingly after the colonial powers pulled out, were planted people under the control of the former colonial powers. And all that's happened in Africa is that physical occupation has been replaced by financial occupation, and the African countries are as controlled by their former colonial masters as ever they were before, but it's more hidden and less obvious, and therefore there is less rebellion. In America, again, the terrific manipulation of America from outside of America. And once you realize that these bloodlines have an allegiance to the bloodline, have an allegiance to their agenda, and not to the country they are apparently supposed to be members of and leaders of, you start to realize why people like George Bush can be a frontman for the economic and military destruction of America, because that's what's going on. I've been talking for years in my books that the plan was to use America to destroy America. For this reason, George, and we're seeing it happen now, the idea is to create a world structure of control, an Orwellian state in which we have a world government that would dictate to every country, a world army that would impose the will of the world government, a world currency, which would be electronic, not cash, a world central bank, and a microchip population. People laughed when I said the latter, but it's happening.
What happens is,
it's a simple equation. When the few want to control the many, you have to centralize decision-making so the few are making the decisions and not the diversity of the many, which is something you cannot control. And so what we're seeing now is the destruction of the superpower, China's another that will be brought into this, which is up to now capable of resisting any dictate from any world government. World governments and superpowers don't go together, and they're using America now to destroy America. To bring
Stay
this
with
about.
Us, David. David, Aaron from Denver, Colorado writes, for your views on the rejection of the European Union's constitution by the French and the Dutch. He's saying, do you think those two countries recognize that this could be the beginning of the new world order?
I don't think it's as sophisticated as that, George, because, you know, the numbers that voted against do not relate to the numbers who are informed of what's actually going on behind the scenes. What is happening is that there is an instinct that is beyond words almost, that the power is going further and further away from those who are the victims of the power, that people don't want to go any further. And what I was talking about before the break in terms of to control, the few to control, they have to centralize decision-making. Is absolutely precisely the reason for the European Union and why they want an American continent version of it also. It's because once upon a time we had a tribal situation where the tribes decided on what they were going to do. They were then brought together in nations, if you like, and then from a central point all the previous tribal groups were dictated to. And in Europe, we've gone now to the European Union, where now the countries are brought together under a central dictatorship. And if you look at the symbol from which the word fascism actually comes, the fasci, it is a series of bound rods, comes out of the Roman Empire, appropriately, with an axe head at the top. And the bound rods represent individuality, and the axe head represents centralized dictatorship of the individuality. And I cannot think of a symbol that would more sum up the European Union, where we have a situation now where if you want to sell vegetables or anything else in the old British system of pounds and ounces, then they will take you to court and prosecute you for not doing it in the system of the European Union. How ridiculous, even though your customers might want pounds and ounces. This is the level of individuality and choice is actually being taken away. Now, we have reached a point where they want to play a major card, George. They want this constitution to create what I've been talking about in my books all these years, right back to And the Truth Shall Set You Free. They want a president of Europe and a European foreign minister. And that's just a stepping stone to a complete centralized government of Europe.
Will they get it, David?
Well, a number of countries have voted for it. But what they've got caught by is this. One of the greatest forms of moving this agenda on is what I call the totalitarian tiptoe. It's where you're going from A and you know you're going to Z, or Z as you say in America, but you're not going to go in one leap because people will look up and say, what's going on? What's going on here? Because the change is so great. So what you do is you go from A to B and then maybe to E, and then you go down in stepping stones, the totalitarian tiptoe. And each move, each progression towards the long-identified and desired goal is projected as completely unconnected to all the others. However, there comes a point and points on that progression where to placate people who begin to say, hold on a minute, you have to say, okay, we'll do this then. One example of this is the Bush administration allowing some so-called sunset clauses in so they could get some great freedom-busting legislation through less molested. So what they had to do is to say that any major change in Europe, don't worry, because any major change in Europe, all countries of the European Union have to agree. And this is what they've got caught in now, because there's 25, and they have to have, according to these rules, 25 saying, yes, okay, we'll accept the Constitution. Now, two of the major players, founder players in Europe, Holland and France, have now said massively in public referendum, no. And now what we're going to see is an effort to somehow override that situation. And one of the ways that they've done it in the past is that when a country like Ireland and Denmark in various other proposals by the European Union for centralization, etc., and single currency, when they've voted no in a referendum, what they've done is waited a bit and then had another one. And certain key people change sides miraculously, even though the debate is the same, and they basically keep asking the question until they get the answer they want. The problem they have at the moment, however, is that the rejection is so fundamental in these countries, and these countries are so important at the heart of Europe, that it's going to be very interesting. I should think they're running around like headless chickens at the moment, but their focus will not be to let it go. Their focus will be, how do we get out of this?
I think you're absolutely right, and sooner than later, don't you think?
Well, they have a time scale. Now, I was saying in the late 90s that their time scale was behind schedule because, you know, for whatever reason, the window around 2012 is very important to these people. And what happened then was 9/11. And 9/11 has enormously caught up with their timescale. Not necessarily caught up, but it's advanced it very quickly for obvious reasons, and that, I would strongly suggest, is why it happened. And the they have a timescale for the European Union, and this threatens to knock it out if they take a long time to sort out this crisis that their gender is facing at the moment over here. But also on the same subject, as the problems continue in Iraq, as the memory of 9/11 starts to fade and becomes less effective in justifying the advancement of the Orwellian agenda, there's no doubt, George, 9/11 in other forms is in their pipeline. And my understanding, the more people I talk to, is that 2006 seems to be a year when they might play some of these cards, because to create public, again, everything that we're talking about tonight, no matter what level of it we're talking about, they all interconnect. What we're talking about in advancing this agenda is mind manipulation, reality manipulation. Because they manipulated the reality of the vast majority of people that the basic story of 9/11 was correct, then certain things were allowed, like the invasion of Afghanistan and changes in the Patriot Act and all this stuff. So they are going to be adding to that, so that the increasing resistance to this whole agenda starts to be broken down by, hey, you know, I know it's bad, but we've got to do something with what's happening in the world. There's another terrorism and all that stuff. So, you know, we have got to be very, very wary when these events happen, and ask a simple question. Who benefits? Who benefits from 9/11? Not the people who died. Not the Arab world. Who benefits? Who benefits is anyone that wanted to take basic freedoms away and launch a war on terrorism, which is actually a war by terrorists, in fact.
See, I've always asked myself that same question. Let's clear up this one thing, though, David. Do you believe that this group that helped orchestrate this involved some of these crazed fundamentalists to do the dirty deed, or do you think that they didn't do anything? See, I believe that the Bin Ladens of life were truly involved as well.
Well, when you look at a secret society, it is broken up into levels of degree. Now, levels of degree equals levels of knowledge of what's going on. And all these situations, even like 9/11, they are compartmentalized in terms of how much people know. And there's no doubt that there are people involved in so-called terrorist acts. In fact, not even so-called. When I say so-called, I mean, you know, blaming the wrong people. But there are people who are genuinely involved in terrorist acts who have no idea, going back up the hierarchy, who's actually behind what they're doing. They can think that Master is Mr. A when it's Mr. Z. And so it's all smoke and mirrors, and it's not easy, to say the least, to be definitive on this, and it would be stupid for anyone to think they can be. But my feeling is that an enormous amount of the, or all, really, the fundamental setup and engineering of 9/11 was not involving the Arab world at all. And I'm still unconvinced about the official story of Arab terrorists. In fact, the more that I come across the emerging information about the planes involved and what have you, the less credible this whole thing seems to be. Certainly. I mean, again, you know, intelligent life calling planet Earth. Certainly, people who were incompetent pilots of Cessna aircraft are not going to park 767, 757s perfectly into these buildings. I mean, please. The very idea that people can put those two things, see those two things and not put two and two together, that one is not going to do the other, it just beggars belief. So for me, the whole 19 hijackers story is fundamentally flawed. And I think at the very least, the input from the Arab world was tiny in terms of, or in contrast to the engineering of it within the borders of the United States.
You see,
9/11 was created as a problem to get a reaction of outrage and fear and terror, exactly, and understandable, to get the ability to offer the solution, which has been changes in society that George Orwell, on whatever dimension he may be, must be shaking his head and saying, I told you so.
And changes that we have only seen the tip of the iceberg, David.
You're correct. And like I said a few minutes ago, George, to push people further on down this road to global centralized fascism, they are going to need more 9/11 type events to create problems, to create the reaction, to offer the solutions. Because 9/11 is not by itself going to be enough to get people to go with this to the level, you quite rightly say, that they plan to do it. I mean, people say, what would the world be like if these guys complete their agenda? Well, think of Nazi Germany, make it global, there you go. That's what they want. That's what I've been saying for 15 years. And now, you know, we're seeing.
And you're not backing down at all on this, are you?
No, not at all. No, not least, George, because, no, I'm not, you know, the fountain of all knowledge. You know, is every last thing that I say all right, 100% true? Are you kidding? We're trying to understand something that doesn't want to be understood here. But the themes and a great deal of the fine detail is now in front of our face. One of the things that I was talking about years ago, and this is very relevant to what we were talking about earlier in terms of reality and the biological computer, is the microchip. What they're doing now, they're talking about ID cards. This is the totalitarian tiptoe, mate. What they want is microchip people. They want a situation, like I've been saying for 15 years or more, they want a situation where every baby at birth is microchipped. And we're now having nightclubs in places like Spain microchipping people so that they can get through the door and beat the queues easier. I mean, it's all areas are now beginning to justify this, particularly something called the Very Chip, which comes out of America. And when you understand the nature of the physical form and the nature of the reality that we're in, the biological computer, you start to see the potential, the real potential behind the microchip. Back in about 98, I met a CIA scientist who asked to meet me because he wanted to get out what he couldn't himself. And he told me that they had microchips outside the public arena in the secret projects, which is light years ahead of the technology we see in the public arena, which are so small they could be inserted by a hypodermic needle in vaccination programs. But he said this, very important. He said it's not just electronic tagging, so some computer knows where everyone is. It's not just what the microchip sends to the computer, it's what's sent the other way. And he said they can, from a central point, once people are microchipped, they can manipulate them emotionally. Why? Because emotions come through and are an expression of the biological computer, the DNA. They can manipulate you mentally, same reason, and they can manipulate you physically. And when you look at a computer, it has a central processing unit, which is actually known as the brain of the computer by many people. And the central processing unit in the biological computer we call the physical body is the physical brain, the human brain. Now, in a computer, the CPU, the central processing unit, is a microchip. Once they get a microchip inside us, which are far more sophisticated than they're telling us, they can manipulate the communication going around the computer, around the body. And that communication involves emotional communication. This is why when we feel emotions, we create chemicals in the body. This is why when we receive chemicals, it affects us emotionally because one is a reflection of the other. It can affect the way we think and our ability to think by rewiring, if you like, the messages are going around the computer, and fundamentally it can affect us physically. And they can isolate someone individually, or they can do it en masse once they get this microchip. Now, that's the real agenda behind the microchip. And anyone that says, it'll make things ever so much easier. You know, I can go through to the supermarket and I can just put me microchip on me hand and pay me bill, and it's ever so quick, and no queues now. Well, you know, do you want a queue in the supermarket for 10 minutes, or do you want your mind, your emotions, and your physical body control taken away from you? Hey, it's a bit of a choice there. Which one shall I make? Because that's the choice we're facing.
How do they come up with the plan to force people to do this, David? Because I think it's going to come down to where they say, you can't get a job, folks, unless you have one, or we're going to do away with cash, so you have to have a chip. That's the only way you're going to be able to get by.
Perfect summary, George. Absolutely. What they're doing in this country, Blair, who is a, you know, front man, clone, yes man for this Illuminati. That's why he gets manipulated into power. Do you know we have in this great democracy, Great Britain, you know, we now have a government with absolute power, Blair, in his third term, and he got 35% of the vote. 65% of the people of this country voted against him, and he got absolute power. But we live in a free world. The people have spoken. I've got my mandate, he said. Nonsense, but that's the way it works. But what they're doing now is they're bringing proposing ID cards, totalitarian tiptoe. What they're saying, first of all, is, oh, it's only voluntary, you know, you don't have to have one. But then what they start doing is, as you rightly say, is suddenly, well, if you're unemployed, you can't get your unemployment benefit unless you have a card. Oh, and you can't do this unless you have an ID card, because we need ID. And what they're saying is, eventually, a few years after they're first introduced, they're going to be compulsory. And you will not be able to function without an identity card. Now, because we haven't yet seen the other little horrors they have up their sleeves, their future 9/11s of various kinds, we are now looking at ID cards, and we're thinking, oh, well, they're not coming in until 2000 and whatever. But that's what they're saying now, and they're talking ID cards now. My feeling is that there is a very good chance that they won't be talking ID cards by the time ID cards become compulsory. They'll be talking microchips.
When we come back, David, and we'll take phone calls next, is there this bigger picture of why? What do they know that maybe we don't? Is something happening that they think they need total control worldwide? Do they know there's an asteroid coming? What do you think it is? Well, I tell you, David, they're going to sneak these microchips in our system by probably putting them in some kind of vaccine, and we won't even know it.
Well, there's a whole agenda in the background that has been planned for a very long time. When I started investigating this a long time ago now, it became increasingly clear that this agenda is not projected forward a few weeks, a few months, even a few years. It's projected decades ahead. And when you start to realize that the agenda's focus is not in this dimension, then you can start to understand why, in our relationship to time, which doesn't exist anyway, part of the illusion, they can project so far ahead, because they are coming from a completely different point of observation of this reality than we are. So what we find ridiculous and impossible becomes perfectly understandable. While people have been said to me, and I understand the question, you know, how come that people back in the days of Benjamin Franklin and earlier were giving their lives to this agenda? And the answer is because while in our reality we saw people in, you know, big hats and long coats, or further back in other historical situations, in fact that was only what we were perceiving in the illusion of what I call the time loop, this five sense reality. In other dimensions, the focus of the manipulation was not operating in those times at all, in those situations. They were just manipulating this reality from their own reality, and therefore they can project things a long way ahead from our perspective of time, which we would find impossible if we just accepted that this reality is all that exists.
All right, let's go to the phones. First-time caller line, where are you calling from? Hi there.
Hello?
Yeah, hi.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not a first-time caller, but you can take my call.
Well, all right. Well, you're on the first-time caller line, however that happened, but we'll let you in this time.
Wonderful. My name is Heather. I'm calling from Eureka, California, and I had some questions for your wonderful guest.
All right, go ahead.
I grew up Mormon, and the further away I got, the more objective I look at it, and the creepier things I start to see and understand. And I would like your guest to comment on the connection between the Mormon Church and the reptilian oppressors. I'm also interested, he brought up in Children of the Matrix, satanic ritual abuse, and their possible connection to, you know, the reptilian Illuminati. And I'm also wondering if he's seen a connection between the Mormon Church and satanic ritual abuse, you know, in relation to this whole connection to the Illuminati.
All right, I'll let you touch on that, David. I really don't want to go after different religions right now. That's a whole program all by itself.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you've got 3 hours, I could answer the question, but it's in my books. I have actually a chapter in the new book, Infinite Love is the Only Truth, called The God Program, and in which I show that the different religions actually operate to the same computer program. And it is about putting walls around people's sense of reality, limiting their sense of possibility, so that they operate within a fraction of the illusion. It's an illusion within an illusion. And once you have whatever your belief is, and religious belief is the most profound, your belief will repel all borders that challenge that belief, unless, like Heather, you start to see through it and open your mind to a bigger possibility. So religion is a fundamental controlling mechanism. I thought about having some T-shirts made, God Save Us From Religion, on the front, because the spirituality and religion is not the same thing. There can be spiritual people who express that through religion. Yes, of course, I'm not knocking that. And if people want to follow a religion, great. But we all have our different view. But religion is a great, great form of control. And it's interesting when you look at the background to religion, how the common sources keep coming up of the so-called different religions. It's very clear, and you're talking to Claire de Mutra 3 weeks ago about the African perspective, it's very clear that if you go back in our version of time far enough, you find a global culture. And that global culture had a global knowledge. And what happened is, for various reasons, the global situation got broken up. The original knowledge went off in different directions, are called different names, and got changed in different ways. But the same basic fundamental thing was there. Just as, for instance, in Africa, they throw carved bones as part of predicting the future. So we have the tarot cards. It's exactly the same principle. It's just that they do it differently. The rune stones and animal bones. You go around the world, you find these different ways of doing the same thing, because originally they came from a global knowledge. And again, when you look at the Mormon Church, and I won't go into that in detail now, it'll take too long, but when you look at the Mormon Church and you look at where it came from, it was created by Freemasons. Joseph Smith was a Freemason. Brigham Young was a Freemason. They came, both of them, from where the Merovingian bloodline goes back to the Merovingian kings in France, which is a very, very significant, to say the least, Illuminati bloodline, which I've talked about in the books for years. And they created another version of the God program, because when you break them down, as I do in the book, it's amazing how similar they are. The differences are like window dressing and language. And they created another prison religion, as I call them, to imprison the minds of those that are manipulated to advocate it. And what it's doing is saying, this is the truth, this is what you must believe, and if you don't, these are the consequences for not doing so. That's what the God program does all the time, whether it's the Muslim religion or the Christian religion or whatever. And in terms of satanic ritual, well, it's amazing how that comes up in various aspects of all the religions, not least the Roman Catholic religion. But certainly, I have met people and I haven't gone looking for them, in many parts of particularly America, for obvious reasons, who have experienced these rituals. And the hierarchy of the Mormon Church, like so many hierarchies, says one thing, but I have no doubt whatsoever from my own research, they do something and believe something very differently. And if you want to hide something, there's nothing better than to hide it behind something that's supposed to stand for the opposite. There's no better way of running drugs than through an anti-drug agency, because no one looks that way. No, they're anti-drugs. They're an anti-drug agency. Why? They wouldn't run drugs. What? They're religious. They wouldn't do satanic rituals. It's the same principle. Well, they do, and it's amazingly more common than people will even begin to think if they get their information from the mainstream media. Mormon Church is a sick organization, deeply sick, and the people who are manipulated need to know that. And I'll tell you a quick story. I actually went to Salt Lake City, and I went to the Mormon temple. It wouldn't allow me in because I'm not a Mormon, but two lovely, lovely girls came up to me. One was from, I think, Bangkok. The other one was definitely from Hong Kong. And they had saved up for years to get the money to pay their expenses to come over and serve the church. And what they were doing were taking people around and trying to sell the church to them. And when I asked some fundamental questions about how the church was created, who created it, and this, that, and the other, not being aggressive, just out of interest, if they knew, they hadn't got a clue. And this is how religion works. This is how society works through Illuminati control, is it disconnects people from the full range of information available about something, and therefore gives them a false reality of that organization or that situation. Same with 9/11, same with the Mormon Church. And of course, what the religions do is, if you start to question, whether it's the Jehovah's Witnesses or whatever, talk to Jehovah's Witnesses who have actually tried to question the system of that organization and what happens to them, you're jumped upon, you're isolated, you have the group turned against you because you're questioning the truth. And this is how these people survive. It's just by vicious dictatorship, and anything that has to survive by that ain't worth surviving.
Wildcard Line, you're up with David Icke on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, it's Daniel in Los Angeles. I wanted to ask David, is your one missing puzzle piece Jesus' love? I agree that there are false religions, even false sects like the Mormons, but Satan is the leader of the reptilians, or Abaddon, the destroyer of Revelation 9/11, who's worshipped by the Freemasons. And at the 33rd degree, they learn, out of chaos comes order. So they're going to depopulate the planet with this microchip, but you don't have a choice. You either stay and be a slave on a slave planet, or you go home to be with Jesus. And this Las Vegas UFO landing, does he think it could be a reptilian deception in which the reapers gather the tares, which is found in the Bible in Matthew chapter 13?
Well, first of all, there's so many smoke and mirrors that, you know, it's a constant, challenge to see what is real and what is mask, what is smoke and mirrors, what is diversion. There's so many diversions to take you off the path to understanding what's actually going on. But the other thing is that you mentioned that is my one missing puzzle piece Jesus. Well, I only wish that I only had one missing puzzle piece, Daniel. I really do, because there are still a heck of a lot of holes in the picture which need to be pursued. So at any point, you've got what you've got at any point. You've not got it all. In terms of Jesus, no, I don't go for that. I respect those that do, good luck to you. But I don't go for that at all. I don't go for the Jesus story, which is repeated over and over in different cultures around the world with remarkable similarity to the Jesus story. I don't go for this idea that one man is this or one man is that, and we must go and be with this one person, this one entity. We are all infinite consciousness. And once we put someone else or something else on a pedestal, we are looking up and we are disconnecting our reality from the fact that we are all infinite consciousness. We are all infinite love. That's my perspective. And, you know, if others have another perspective, good luck to them. Let's have a beer. But I don't buy the Jesus thing at all.
West of the Rockies, you're on with David Icke. Hi there.
Hey, it's Mike. What a thrill and honor to talk to you both, George. David.
Hello, Mike.
I was really, really concerned about chemtrails and was just wondering how you thought that they were playing into this whole crazy plan that's unfolding. Because I got to tell you, today over central Washington, they were the heaviest I have ever, ever seen them. And just the whole possibilities, I mean, who knows what they're really all about. And I was just really curious if you could please expand on that just a bit.
Any thoughts on chemtrails, David?
Well, I don't like to speak on things I haven't, you know, researched to any length. I think it's insulting to the listener, and it's also ridiculous. And I've not really gone into the chemtrail thing in any detail, except to clearly acknowledge that something very strange is going on here, because I travel a heck of a lot, and it's not just in America that it's happening. It's happening all over the place, and people talk about this phenomenon and the effects that it has on them physically. You know, anyone that's putting chemicals from the sky, which they very clearly seem to be, is going to have a detrimental effect on a physical body that is very, very prone to being rewired by chemicals. So something's going on that is highly significant, and it fits into the whole picture of this multi-level attack on humans mentally, emotionally, and physically, even down to the vast increase in obesity, thanks to fast food and chemicals in food and all this other stuff. If you struggle to operate physically, then that is fundamental to you fully expressing your multidimensional potential in this reality. And so in every area of our computer, physically, mentally, emotionally, etc., we are being attacked and bombarded by the day. And there's a reason for this. It's because we are infinite genius. We are infinite knowing. And for us to be disconnected from that, we have to be bombarded on every level. Because you mentioned earlier, George, I think, that we would talk about the fact that why was this happening? Were they afraid of something, these people doing it? Well, what they're afraid of is human consciousness opening up and expressing itself and overriding the control of the biological computer and its program. It's interesting that when you talk to psychologists, they have this term archetypes, and they say that a remarkably few archetypal personalities can be found in almost every human, and combinations of these archetypal personalities. Well, we're talking infinite possibility here. How can you have a small number of archetypal personalities coming up again and again and again in people when we're dealing with infinite possibility? It's ridiculous. But what these people are picking up are the archetypal personalities, mental and emotional, within the biological computer, the program playing out. This is why, you know, they can identify these things. When you go into infinite consciousness, that level of who we are, then the archetypes start to dissolve because the computer's control is being overridden. And it's the same as an analogy I've used many times. If you have a tank of water and you've got a tennis ball or something and you want to hold the tennis ball on the bottom of the water and you want to keep it there, then you have to hold it there all the time. Because the moment you let go, that ball is going to go into its natural state, which is floating on top of the water. And symbolically, that's what's happening to us and why they're having to bombard us on so many levels to keep us from waking up. It's because our natural state is to be awake. It's to be all-knowing. It's to be infinite consciousness. And what is happening, for whatever reason, clearly, and I've almost been a barometer of this from when I started talking about these things back in the late 80s, early 90s. Mm-hmm. I have seen, and you must have seen it, as I said earlier on your program year after year, George, there is a fundamental awakening going on where people are starting to see through the veil or see beyond the veil. And as a result of that, these guys are running around trying to hit us with everything they can, whether it's chemicals and chemtrails we're talking about, whether it's additives in food, chemical additives in food, whether it's mobile phones that are rewiring the function of the brain, the central processing unit, etc., or whether it's false information. They are seeking to hold us in the trap so that we don't wake up, because, like I say, for some reason, there is a change taking place which is triggering a wake-up call and an alarm call for increasingly vast numbers of people, and they're terrified of this. And for me, that is one of the key reasons they're desperate to get us microchipped, to suppress the ability of the computer to manifest consciousness. They want to scramble the computer. Because, you know, you get someone who's mentally handicapped. It's not that their consciousness is handicapped. It's that their computer doesn't function for whatever reason. And because it doesn't function, they cannot manifest the full potential through it. And symbolically, as of course, when they leave the computer, then they leave the handicap behind. And it's the same with what they're trying to do to us in all these different levels. They're trying to, in effect, handicap us to, if you like, put viruses in the computer so that we cannot fully manifest our awakening potential at this fantastic time when we're opening our eyes and opening our minds and opening our hearts and seeing what we couldn't see before.
We'll be back with final calls for our guest, David Icke. And with not a lot of time left, let's go right back to the phones. We'll pick it up by going to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi.
Welcome. Where are you calling from? Yes, sure is.
Hi. Happy pre-birthday, George Gemini. Nancy, I'm in the East Village in New York.
Oh, hi, Nancy. Go ahead.
Hi. David, I...
Hello, Nancy.
Hello. I met you a number of years ago with Andy Lee. We were making a film on consciousness change called Deep in the Deal. And my question to you is, I haven't been able to finish this film because I've applied for grants from every independent art organization in England and America, and I keep coming up against the blank wall. These are supposed to be independent thinkers and artists, and the film is certainly radical. You are in it. Do you think that something is working against this and against me? I mean, I'm asking for editing money. Everybody I know gets money to finish films on cancer and the more appropriate subjects, and I'm trying not to be paranoid, but I'm kind of wondering if I'm just part of this, you know, I'm on the downside of this movement. It's just cutting me out and my ideas and yours as well.
Well, there's two ways, Nancy, that this works, and one's far more effective and widespread than the other. One is that there are people who are consciously suppressing the information you want to bring forward. Now, that does happen. The one that happens most of the time is that once you set the norms in society, you immediately create the point from which the vast majority of people who buy those norms observe the world. For instance, simple example, a few centuries ago, the media would have dismissed anyone that said the Earth was a sphere because the norm was that it was flat. There eventually came a point where the evidence was overwhelming that the Earth was a sphere, and at that point everything switched, and now anyone who says the Earth is flat is dismissed as ridiculous and far out and nutter. And in the same way, this information about consciousness we're talking about, although staggeringly mainstream science in all its various disciplines has already understood vast amounts of this whole construct of illusion, but it's never put pieces together. So despite that, the norm still is not what we're talking about. And therefore, people make decisions on funding. This may not be the case in yours. It may be knowingly wishing to suppress. But in the vast majority of cases, these people just come from a certain norm. And they will make their funding and supporting decisions based on the norm. And if something's apparently far out from the norm or very different from the norm, their instinct is not to go with it, not to support it. I mean, you know, I talk to television producers all the time who come on and say, we'd like to do this, we'd like to do that, but of course we can't go too far. Well, so there, that point is someone taking the norm as the point of reference and editing what people can hear on the basis of not going too far from the norm from which he is perceiving reality, and also fear of going too far in case these bosses say, what you're doing, that's ridiculous to put that out. It's so crazy. So these things are happening all the time, and whether it's knowingly or whether it's the system of norm support that I'm talking about, I don't know, but your experience is not a rare one, to say the least, in terms of the subjects that we're talking about and the kind of subjects that that George has on his show.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Nance. Appreciate you being part of the program. David, where's the book, by the way, available? Infinite Love is the Only Truth.
It's available from davidicke.com, which is my website, which I have updated news from another perspective of the daily news every day. And, it's been very very encouraging. The interest in the book's been very encouraging indeed. And, you know, in many ways, it's been the most interesting thing I've done, because it's just started to have some fundamental mysteries in my mind anyway start to fall apart. And this thing we started talking about, the DNA, is extremely important. What actually happened that actually triggered me to write this book and all the stuff that followed is a friend of mine, a healer, a very, very advanced healer too, called Mike Lambert, here on the Isle of Wight in England. He came around one day, I hadn't seen him for a while, and we started chatting, and I don't know why it did, but DNA came up. And he said, I wrote a paper years ago about DNA, and he said, I'll bring it around. And he, when I read it, it just hit me like a smack on the head. What hit me was that four DNA codes is all there are, A, C, G, and T. And I came across this quote from the San Francisco Chronicle that really summed it up. It says, DNA is a universal software code from bacteria to humans. The basic instructions for life are written in the same language. Now, what makes the colors, what makes everything in a computer and on the internet? Computer codes. Codes manifest as what we see on the internet. This is exactly what's happening in the holographic internet we call our physical reality. The difference between a house mouse DNA code sequence and a human DNA code sequence is remarkably similar compared with the dramatic difference in physical manifestation. And that what makes things, quote, different is the form, the order in which these codes appear in the DNA. And what also becomes clear is that the DNA is a crystalline antennae. Again, I came across a great quote in an article about this, which said this: from the characteristic form of this giant molecule, a wound double helix, the DNA represents an ideal electromagnetic antenna. On one hand, it is elongated and thus a blade antenna, which can take up very well electrical pulses. On the other hand, seen from above, it has the form of a ring and thus is a very good magnetical antenna. And when I got this smack on the head when I saw these two lines about DNA, I thought, that's the matrix. That's how our collective reality is generated. And what it is, it's simply that the DNA antenna and its central processing unit, the brain, is picking up these waveforms and turning them into a holographic reality that only appears in our head or in our DNA. And when you look at a computer, you switch the computer on, where does the internet exist in the form that we see the internet? It doesn't exist in the phone lines. It doesn't exist in the cables in the form that we see it on the screen. It only exists on the screen in that form. And that's precisely what we're doing with our holographic reality. We are creating a reality that only exists in our heads. And so we're like computers locked into this holographic internet. Now, if we don't bring consciousness in, that silence between the thoughts, then we can be controlled by just following and playing out the program, the computer program. And when we bring consciousness in, that's when we start to express all possibility. That's when we start to see things that we don't when we are following the computer program. And the computer program people then look at you and go, you're mad, you're strange. No, you're different because you are in this world, but you are not of it. You are experiencing this world from the perspective of being infinite consciousness beyond the program and not experiencing this world as the program. And that's why throughout what we call history, people who have said these things have been considered extreme, far out, strange people. And anyone that doesn't follow the norm, the program, is considered strange. But all they are is different because they're coming from a different point of perspective. Now, if we can, and we all can do it, if we can open ourselves so that we view this world, perceive this world from the point of infinite consciousness, then I tell you from experience, and I'm not special in, you know, any way. I'm just like everyone else, infinite consciousness. And once you do that, your life starts to change, and you see, it's like a veil lifts. And suddenly you can see things you couldn't see before. Why? Because you're seeing them from beyond the matrix and not from within the matrix. And that's the transformation. You know, we don't have to meet this control agenda by stockpiling weapons or hanging Henry Kissinger or any of this stuff I hear. It's about changing our reality by changing our perception of reality. When we do that, our reality must change because we're generating it. And if we come from infinite consciousness in terms of our reality, then our reality in this physical experience is going to change dramatically. And incidentally, we have 120 billion miles of DNA. That was a bit of a shocker when I saw that. And that's antennae, and that's locking us into the matrix all the time. And it's an interesting point, George, about this too, is that because we're dealing with a holographic situation, you can start to project a further understanding, which is this. With a hologram, one of its amazing characteristics is that every part of the hologram contains a smaller version of the whole. You don't get a smaller part or one part of the whole. You get a smaller version of the whole. So if you cut a holographic picture into four, you wouldn't get four quarters of the whole picture. You'd get four smaller versions of the whole picture. This is why reflexologists and acupuncturists, etc., can find all areas of the body, in the feet, in the ear, in the hand, wherever. That has to happen because the body is a hologram, and therefore every part of the body is a smaller version of the whole. Starts to explain why this alternative stuff happens and why they can find the whole body in different parts of the body. But it explains something else. If we are a hologram, then we are going to be a smaller expression of the whole. And so the whole, what I call the super hologram in the book, which you could also call the matrix, also is basically a version of us. And so there is, like we have a central processing unit, the brain, like we have a DNA computer. So this super hologram must have the same. And that fits absolutely with what I'm talking about, with us picking up this holographic frequency reality and turning it into holograms. And in the article, which I put as an appendix in the book, about the Russian scientists who decided the body is a holographic computer, a biological computer, it makes the point about the queen ant. When you have a queen ant and you have all the worker ants, the worker ants can go a long, 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 long way from the queen ant, but the colony still works in coordination and structure. When the queen ant dies, that's when chaos ensues and the whole thing falls apart. Why? Because the queen ant is generating the frequency information to the worker ants, which is the program which they are following. Only when the queen ant, and this can obviously travel over distance, because they're picking it up like a radio set. Once the queen ant dies, then the radio switched off and everything goes into chaos because the instructions are not going anymore. And more than symbolically, it seems to me, that is how this whole matrix reality works. There is some point which is broadcasting a reality which we're picking up. Now, we can accept it and follow the program, or we can bring consciousness in and override the program, in which case we'll live a very different life and have a very different perspective of the reality we're experiencing.
Okay, thanks for that, David. Let's move on. Let's go to our wild card line. It's your turn. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, George, you there?
Yes, I am.
Yes, this is Peter from Newbury Park. We saw David in Pasadena last year, and he quoted the Bible. And I think he quoted it out of context. He talked about Genesis 6 with the Nephilim, where they could have possibly been demons cohabitated with man. That's entirely possible. However, they died in the flood. But my main point was
the Bible says they died in the flood. You accept that, well, maybe others won't, you know?
Well, the fact that the Bible is scientifically, archaeologically, grammatically, and historically and prophetically correct in every single... without a doubt. But what my main point was, you equated Jesus with Ishtar and Baal. The only problem with that is they can't answer prayer. They can't resurrect you from the dead. They can't restore that baby that might have been aborted or miscarried with his mother, if that woman's in Christ. They're not God in the flesh.
Okay, I'm not going to move on with that. That's going to get a little too biblical for me. Thanks for the call. West of the Rockies, welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi. Happy birthday, George.
Thank you.
Hi,
David.
George, by the way. It's not a bad question.
Hi, David. Hi, David.
Hello, how you doing?
Yeah, real good, and I read your latest book, Tales from the Time Loop. Very good.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, especially Babylon being the Vatican and the money coming out of London.
The progression of the Church of Babylon through to the Church of Rome very, very interesting. And
here's a question, though. You say infinite love is infinite knowing, and for me, the one, you know, the conundrum is one versus the many.
Yeah.
Or the one and the many, which you so brilliantly expounded on just about a minute ago. And for me, the one is Yahweh. And when I am in Yahweh, then I am in the super hologram. Now, so my question to you is, who is the knower in your knowing? And I just thank you for the work you're doing.
Well, thank you very much, indeed. I see it. Definitely, I think the super hologram is the world of vibration, and beyond that is the world of silence, all knowing, and the world of no vibration. Because as this voice said to me in Brazil, if it vibrates, it's illusion. Because to vibrate, something needs two points between which to oscillate. And what this voice was saying to me was that when we talk of oneness, unity, we're talking about one oneness. And because it's unity, there is no polarities. There are no polarities between which to oscillate. Therefore, there is no vibration. It's not only silence. It is stillness. And we talk about going into the stillness of the heart, going into the silence. And what we're doing is going, I would suggest, beyond the super hologram, into the realms beyond it, the realms of all-knowingness rather than limitation, rather than thought, rather than emotion, and rather than vibration. And in terms of Yahweh, people have different names. You know, if they want to call oneness Ethel, it really doesn't matter because it just is. We seem desperate as humans to give a name to everything, when everything just is. And for me, if you can give a name to what you believe, you're in a prison. Because everything just is. We all just are. It's what I call in the book, the force with no name. Because it just is. And once we start putting names to what we believe, names to things, we start to disconnect from the whole and start to create parts rather than the unity of all.
All right, David, the clock has got us. We are wrapping things up right now.
Okay, man.
Very quickly, where's your next travel plans?
I'm talking in Mount Shasta, which is an amazing place. I've been twice before. I know a lot of people say, you know, it's a very spiritual place, and that word is thrown around a lot, but I tell you what, Mount Shasta's a heck of a powerful place. And I'm talking there at the end of June. I think it's the 23rd and the 24th in Mount Shasta. So I'm looking forward to that.
All right. Thanks, David. You take care of yourself.
Yeah, happy birthday, mate.
Okay. David Icke for Dan Galante, Steve Carr, Karis Coburn, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Shama Dasur, and Art Bell. I'm George Norris. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.